Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 29th of June, and this is the very excellent Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. I think if I use the gavel to begin the meeting, suddenly a quorum will appear.
And voila.
There they are.
Look at that.
It's like magic.
Anybody happen to notice where our LFO professional staff person went to?
Out in the hall when I saw her last.
All right.
Gavel again.
Colleagues, we've got a number of items to move through today, and for anybody who has been trying to monitor this committee online, as well as for those of you in the audience, let me apologize. The schedule is a little bit erratic right now. The Senate ran into the lunch hour. The full Committee on Ways and Means met in this very room for 45 minutes, and we're about 15 minutes behind schedule. I believe some of the House members have commitments at 2 o'clock. And we're going to see just how much work we can transact between now and then. So I'm going to begin today by opening a work session on House Bill 2012 relating to the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Region. Mr. Bender, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. You had a public hearing on this bill earlier this week. You may recall that House Bill 2012 establishes... Excuse me, I have to catch my breath.
Take a minute. You're okay.
The Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Board and the Eastern Oregon Border Economic Development Board Fund in the Oregon Business Development Department. This board is charged with developing and implementing strategies for workforce development and economic development in the region of the state that borders the state of Idaho. The board is also authorized to make grant and loan awards in support of these strategies. The bill provides $10 million in lottery revenue bond proceeds to this fund. However, LFO is recommending the -A3 amendments, which have been posted to OLIS. The difference, or what the change that the -A3 makes, is it replaces the lottery bond support with $5 million of general fund cash support. The agency would then have access to this cash. They would be able to provide up to $4.96 million in potential loans and grants and have support for up to $40,000 of administrative costs for the program.
Well, thank you, Mr. Bender. Do you have any recommendations?
Yes, we recommend passage of the bill with first adopting the A3 amendments to the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move the A3 amendments to House Bill 2012A.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Colleagues, you have heard the recommendation and the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, we have adopted the amendments.
And then we would recommend that House Bill 2012, as amended by the -A3 amendments, be moved to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair, I would move amended House Bill 2012 to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you so much, Co-Chair. Again, colleagues, any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion carries. And who would like to carry?
Hansel.
Senator Hansel, you want to take that to the full and to the Senate floor?
That'd be fine.
All right. And anyone so inclined to handle this on the House side?
I'd be happy to, but I recommend Rep. Bence.
All right. Well, let's see if Representative Bence is willing. If not, then Representative Reardon will be his stand-in. Fair enough?
Sounds good.
All right. Then I'll go ahead and close the work session on 2012. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 693A. This is a measure relating to driving privileges.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, you held a public hearing on Senate Bill 693 on June 6th. This is the bill that eliminates probationary driver licenses, makes changes to the requirements to obtain a hardship permit, and repeals driver license suspensions. The bill is anticipated to have a minimal fiscal effect.
Well, thank you so much. Are there any recommendations?
We are recommending adoption of the -A4 amendment. It expands the current exemption for members of the armed forces and their spouses to those who work for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and their spouses.
Thank you. And just to clarify, the that NOAA is not part of the armed services, but they are part of the United States uniformed services.
Mr. Chair, before we go on, I know what Mr. Jolivet just said, but I think somebody listening to this cold may need a little more information on the suspension, driving while suspended. I think the your remarks left the impression that we were doing away with driver suspensions.
Repeals driver license suspensions for certain criminal offenses. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. All right.
Co-chair, question is regarding the recommended adoption of the dash A4s.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend the adoption of the dash A4s into Senate Bill 693A.
Thank you. Colleagues, any discussion on the A4 amendments? Any objections?
Question.
Please.
Is the A4 posted? I see an A3.
We'll take a moment to answer that question.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right, thank you for that question. All right, again, any objections? If not, the A4s are adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Coach, let me just ask, are there any further amendments that have been presented to us on this measure?
This is the only amendment.
These are the only amendments. All right. Thank you very much. Senator.
Mr. Chair, I would move amended Senate Bill 693A to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator. Colleagues, any discussion? You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none. 693A is adopted. I'll be happy to take that one to the full and to the House floor.
I respectfully suggest Senator Winters.
Senator Winters, on the Senate side. All right. Anything else on 693A? All right. Seeing none, I will close the work session on 693A. I will move to a work session on House Bill 2638A relating to ignition interlock devices.
House Bill 2638 establishes a certification program for ignition interlock device service centers and technicians. The program will be administered by ODOT in 1719 and transferred to OSP in 1921. Initial startup costs estimated at $394,383 will be funded with federal NHTSA grant until fees are established and collected. At the public hearing on this on June 6th, ODOT committed to continue to assist with funding until the program fees cover the Oregon State Police administrative costs.
Thank you very much.
And recommendations?
LFO recommends adoption of the Dash 7 amendment. It provides ODOT expenditure limitation for three positions to administer the program in 1719.
Senator Johnson.
Before I make the motion, I would like to acknowledge ODOT's cooperation when we negotiated this when you last appeared. I think this has given the bill life and allowed it to move forward, and I just want to thank your nimble assistance. With that, Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2638A relating to ignition interlock devices.
Thank you, Senator. I think the agency is nothing if not nimble on a regular basis, and I appreciate them as well. Colleagues, you have heard the motion for adoption of the Dash 7s. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the Dash 7s are adopted. Senator Johnson, any further thoughts?
Budget note.
Oh, excuse me. All right.
The measure also has the following budget notes. The Department of Transportation is directed to work with the Department of State Police on the adoption of rules related to the establishment of fees for application issuance and renewal of certification fees that will adequately cover the administrative costs related to the ignition interlock device certification program established by House Bill 2638. The fee structure should provide sufficient revenue to cover the anticipated administrative costs of the program, upon its transfer to the Department of State Police. The Department of Transportation is directed to report to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means during the 2018 legislative session on the status of the certification program and the proposed fees. The Department of Transportation is directed to include in its 2019-21 budget request a policy package that will transfer federal National Highway Traffic Safety Administration impaired driving grant funds to the Department of State Police for the purpose of providing funding for the IID Service Center certification program until the certification program fee revenue can adequately cover the Department of State Police administrative costs. LFO recommends adoption of the proposed budget language.
Mr. Chair, before I move to adopt the budget note language, would it be appropriate to just double check with ODOT? I see them sitting here in the audience to make sure that that language in the budget note is what they anticipated. I see thumbs up, and that could be reflected in the record. With that, Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the budget note into House Bill 2638A.
Thank you so much for that motion, Co-Chair. Any discussion, colleagues?
I meant amended.
Excuse me, yes.
House Bill 2638.
Any objection? All right, let the record reflect that everybody's thumbs are up. And we're ready, I believe, for a final recommendation.
LFO recommends that House Bill 2638, as amended, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move amended House Bill 2638 be moved to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Did I say it wrong? 2638A.
Okay, I'm sorry. There was a little bit of conflict in the documentation. I believe you did say 2638A, Senator. So, is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, motion is adopted.
Senator Monroe volunteers on the Senate side.
And would Senator Monroe also volunteer to take this to the full Ways and Means?
He did.
I'm very pleased to hear that. And Representative Noble has volunteered to carry it on the House side. So I'm going to close the work session on 2638A. And I apologize. I just noticed there's a couple of representatives in the audience I should have asked sooner. Are you here on 2912 or 2724?
Yes.
2912.
Well,
all right. All right.
This is 2724.
Well, the answer is both. So, that being the case, I will defer to seniority, and I will open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2912. And we are rotating through professional staff with lightning speed. So, Ms. Deister, welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Deister.
This is relating to a program for affordable housing land acquisition development.
Yes. House Bill 2912 establishes a land acquisition revolving loan program within the Department of Housing and Community Services. The department will fund the program with $3 million of existing resources from an undersubscribed pre-development program. The proposed amendment eliminates provisions of the measure that established a separate fund for this program. A separate fund is not necessary given that the program will be funded from existing resources. No additional expenditure limitation is necessary, as such limitation was already included in the budget for that undersubscribed pre-development program. But two limited duration positions at 0.5 FTE each and attendant services and supplies are recommended for administration of the program. So there'll be approximately $2.7 million for land acquisition activities. All funds are anticipated to be expended by the end of the 17-19 biennium.
Thank you, Ms. Deister, and welcome. Representative Kenny Geyer, are you planning to lead off?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg and Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, and I'm here as chair of the committee that brought this to you. It's there's bipartisan sponsorship, chief sponsors of the bill. I'm sorry that Representative Mark Johnson and Representative Huffman could not be here because I know it's the housing authority person in the Hood River area who's very, very passionate about this concept, having watched the revolving loan fund for land acquisition program in Washington State. And I know you'll hear more about that probably from Ryan and maybe from Director Salazar as well. As you know, we are more than 100,000 units behind. One of the estimates is 137,000 units behind just in affordable housing. We need to do everything we can. We have very little money on the table, but we are, with statutory authority for this, we're able to use a pre-development fund that is currently there, change the language around it so that we can put this revolving loan fund into place like Washington State has to allow organizations that have an affordable housing and want to respond to a NOFA, a notice of fund availability. Often they, if they don't have the money or if they have not secured the land, they miss the opportunity because that's one of the requirements of the NOFA, is that you have land. And we've seen several examples. Most recently, I believe it was IRCO, which is deals with refugees and immigrants. So this is a really critical piece. All it is statutory authority. We would use the fund that's already in place, including for the staffing. So bring this to you on behalf of our committee. Very passionate about it. Little piece of the puzzle.
Thank you so much, Representative. And who'd like to go next?
Thank you, Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Ryan Fisher, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Housing Authorities. As Representative Kenny Geyer referenced, this bill came from a housing authority which serves in the Gorge, both portions of Oregon and Washington. And so this bill is modeled after a successful program in Washington. Essentially, the way it would work is if a piece of land comes available that would be ideal for developing for affordable housing, this revolving loan fund can be used so that a nonprofit or a housing authority could acquire that land and then put in for the funding. Once they get the funding for the development, then they would pay the loan back in full with 1% interest, and it would be available for another housing developer in the future, particularly in rural areas where potential housing developers don't have a lot of capital. This is a very valuable tool. So I will leave it at that. I know it's a busy day, so I appreciate the time to testify, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. And Director.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Margaret Salazar, and I'm Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. As you know, I started as a director at OHCS last fall, just as the process was gearing up for the legislative session. My team and I have been fortunate to work with our partners on many of the bills the legislature has considered this session to address the housing need across Oregon. Of those many bills, House Bill 2912 is a concept that immediately rose to the top for my consideration. The Land Acquisition Revolving Loan Program is based, as you've heard, on a successful Washington State program. We've had the opportunity to discuss this with our counterparts at the State Housing Finance Authority in Washington State and have heard their good word about how the program has operated in that state. House Bill 2912 would provide low-interest loans to allow nonprofit developers and housing authorities to acquire and hold land as they work to leverage federal, state, local, and private investment to build affordable homes. That early investment helps our housing developers to get ahead of escalating land costs, which is a problem across the state. We have heard from our partners that this program would help to address an unmet need, particularly in rural communities where access to capital is extremely limited. Recognizing that Oregon is facing an unprecedented housing crisis, I feel that HB 2912 is an opportunity that we cannot pass up this session. That's why our agency is committed to funding $3 million toward its implementation. That includes an initial investment of $2.5 million to seed the fund, as well as $500,000 to support the staffing to stand up the program and to monitor compliance for the 2017 through 2019 biennium. You may be asking yourselves, where do these dollars come from? As a new director, I charged our staff to identify innovative opportunities to focus any potential underutilized resources that may exist within our agency's budget. And through that work, we identified a program fund from a dormant pre-development loan program. That pre-development loan program has been on the books for quite some time, but unfortunately, the statutory authority governing the pre-development loan program does not allow us to use those funds for land acquisition. It was primarily focused to soft costs, studies, feasibility analyses, things like that. So funding for HB 2912 aligns with the original intent for the pre-development funds and will allow our agency to use the proven model from another state for land acquisition. This is funding from a dormant program that can be utilized now. I feel it is prudent to rapidly deploy these funds into proven effective solutions that will bring more housing opportunity to Oregonians, particularly in rural parts of the state. I want to recognize and thank Ryan Fisher for his work on this bill on behalf of the housing authorities, as well as to recognize Joel Madsen, the director of the Mid-Columbia Housing Authority, who has been a champion of this issue as well. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today, and I urge your support.
Well, thank you, Director. Senator Johnson.
Let me start by saying I am supportive of the bill. Supportive. Now I'm going to drop down into a level of detail that I would like to build a record about. I have a ton of questions. And probably, Ms. Salazar, a bunch of them would go to you. This is a new program, so you haven't stood up the rules yet. But here are my questions. Will there be a cap on the grants? Because this is not a huge amount of money, and with land prices soaring, how are you going to avoid frequent flyers, or how do you make sure that the funds are equitably accessible?
So, Co-Chair, I appreciate that question. We have not delved into the detail on what the caps on the grants would be, but I would imagine that we would have a reasonable range that we would, loans, not grants, a reasonable range that we would impose.
Let me keep going. What's the security for the loan? Is it the title to the land?
Yes.
Okay. Next one. How are you going to screen eligibility of your applicants? I am channeling Co-Chair Gomberg to make sure that they have no outstanding tax obligations to the state of Oregon, that they are organized in a legal way, that all of their proper documentation, that they have a track record, that these are not fly-by-night operations that are trying to access available state money.
Madam Co-Chair, absolutely appreciate the questions, and I can tell you that from our experience in prior forays into land acquisition, we've learned a lot of lessons about really digging into the capacity of the counterparty that we're working with. So we hear that loud and clear, and we would certainly build that into the rules for the program.
Okay. May I continue?
Please.
Are there geographic limitations? I have heard both of the all three of you testify that this is modeled on a program in the Gorge. Will this be accessible to all housing authorities or developers statewide, or are there limitations?
Madam Co-Chair, again, we have not drafted the rules for the program. In Washington State, what we heard from our partners there is that part of what works well for the program is to allow the flexibility of folks to be able to bring in an opportunity on short order. A land acquisition opportunity has come up. They come into the state housing finance agency. They're able to act on it quickly rather than, for example, setting up a competition and putting it out through a NOFA, which is how we typically put out our housing construction dollars. That being said, it is fair to have these sort of regional targets, and I think we would want to make sure that we stand up the program in such a way that we are giving a fair shake to some of the areas that are particularly underserved, and we would want to look at that carefully.
Next question. Who has the responsibility for the due diligence on the land so that we don't have in our portfolio a land that housed a gas station with six buried tanks? Who is on the hook for that?
Senator, appreciate that question. I believe in Washington State that that work is all done by the applicant. We will verify that, but it is not the it is work that is done by the applicant that is then reviewed by the state agency. And I don't know whether Ryan has any additional insights on that.
Co-Chair Johnson, that is my understanding based on how the Washington program has been described to me as well. And it goes back to your previous question of who is on the hook. It is the organization that is applying for the loan that needs to do the due diligence. And then again, it would be reviewed by the agency.
Well, I want to make sure on that due diligence piece. I don't want to find out that we have a brownfield or a hazardous waste site or some problem where then the state becomes the successor liable party.
Absolutely.
Okay, next question. Minimum qualifications for any of your applicants? Will you take startups because this might be a lucrative opportunity for somebody to cut their teeth on a program subsidized by the state, or are you going to ask for a track record of success and demonstrable capability to deliver?
Senators, I mentioned in my statement previously, I think we've learned a lot about what not to do in terms of making these sorts of offers to folks. We definitely need to make sure that the folks that are coming in have the capability to pull this off. There is a time frame here where the loan would have to be paid back. So if the housing does not materialize, we want to make sure that those funds come back into the agency.
And that was my last question. How long a property owner could hold the land prior to moving forward? I mean, some deals take a while to mature, and some of them never mature. And holding precious capital in abeyance while you try to put together the impossible deal is not in the best interest of this program?
In Washington State, Senator, thank you for the question. In Washington State, it's an 8-year time frame. I believe that's, I don't recall if that language is in the legislation.
Boy,
but
that's a long time for a de minimis amount of money.
It is a long time. That being said, the model of what's sometimes called land banking has been very successfully utilized not only at the state level but in local communities to be able to, again, get ahead of those land costs. So, you know, looking, you know, hindsight is 20/20. If folks are able to acquire land a decade ago in certain parts of, you know, suburban communities here in Oregon, they would have been very wise as costs have escalated. So that's sort of that middle ground between allowing folks enough time but not you know, having it sit out there.
Two more. One of them is a follow-up on this line. Have you, as this program gets stood up and starts to mature, I think the legislature would welcome advice from you on recommendations towards regulatory streamlining, permit expedited, so that you could get these projects going and they're not caught in the usual morass of NIMBY lawsuits. And we have such a low bar to standing. Basically, anybody with a postage stamp has standing, and you might at some point want to contemplate expedited permitting.
Thank you for the comments.
And one last one. In this legislature, a few biennia ago, I helped cobble together a partnership that involved the Meyer Memorial Trust. They had had a focus on housing. And I don't know whether or not, as this program stands up, the trustees and the executives of the Meyer Memorial Trust would look favorably on putting a matching amount of money in to see if you could build a corpus, and I presume you're going to keep the interest off of this, but build a more substantial corpus that would then be available to fulfill the intended purpose of doing this.
Senator, thank you for the comments. I think one of the things that's attractive for us as the state housing finance agency is the concept of a revolving loan fund, which, as you say, would allow us to sort of seed a program and be able to receive the payments from it and potentially grow that corpus and grow that program with additional investments. We don't have a vehicle to do that right now. This would create that opportunity for us to look at those strategies.
Could I add something there? Madam Co-Chair, I think that's a fantastic idea, and I just want to say that on February 7th, which was the date that Director Salazar came to introduce Housing Community Services as an agency to our committee, we also had a panel from Meyer Memorial Trust with CEO Doug Stamm, because housing is one of their four top priorities. They have been very in favor of the land acquisition idea, and I think that's a fantastic idea once we have the infrastructure in place. They also, besides having housing as a priority, they're one of the leaders in mission-related investing. And so certainly doing that for a 1% interest rate return is exactly how mission-related investing works. I think that's a great idea.
It was young Mr. Stamm that I cut the deal with.
Yeah. And the other thing that they've been very supportive of is preservation. And so I am hoping that they will also put some dollars into preservation because they've been doing that. So
thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Representative.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Co-Chair. I only have one question. So, and you mentioned the land banking, and through the earlier discussion, I thought, oh, surely we're not doing land banking, because it sounded like providing money for a quick opportunity for somebody that has, you know, a development they're ready to go on. So I'm confused about how you could do land banking, tie up that money for a long time.
So Representative, I may have, thank you for the question, I may have misspoken using the terminology land banking, but really the intent here is that sometimes in local communities, an opportunity to acquire land may come up, and it may take quite some time for the local community to really come together with the proposal, get the approvals, as you heard Senator Johnson talk about, local permitting approvals, and really put together the financing for the capital and construction. So that's why, you know, there may be times when folks are able to act quickly, acquire the land, and move quickly, but there are times when it may take a few years for that deal to come together. If in the model we have right now, folks have to wait to come to our agency when they have the full package ready to go. By the time they're ready to go with all the financing, that land cost has escalated significantly, and it sometimes ends up being out of reach. So the idea is to allow folks to hold the land for some time while they put together the rest of the financing, and then they can come in and get the job done.
I think I have it. May I just try to put my own words?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. So it is actually a community that might acquire land waiting for, say, like Rose Development or somebody to come along and do the development on the land that the community is holding. Is that
Representative, so the eligible applicants for this would be housing developers. So it would be nonprofits and housing authorities. But the idea is that, you know, working with a local community, they may identify together a land parcel, working with their local elected leadership and others and local housing departments, and that the developer would then receive funding from our agency through in the form of a loan to acquire the land. Then they could hold on to it and have a real parcel that they'd be able to work with, work through all the work to put together a concept, put together a financing package, and then come into our agency for the funding.
Thank you for your patience.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Unless anybody has a really pressing question, Senator, you look like you have a...
Just a suggestion. Talk to ODOT. They're being directed to divest themselves of surplus property. It would be near transportation centers of commerce. There's a deal to be had there, I'm sure.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much to this panel, particularly Representative Kenny Geyer, for your tireless work on housing this session. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else here that wanted to speak to us on 2912? All right, I did open both a public hearing and work session. Ms. Deister, any recommendations for us?
The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends adoption of the -1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of the -1 amendment to House Bill 2912.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? The -1s are adopted.
Okay, the Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending that House Bill 2912, as amended by the -1 amendment, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move that 2912, as amended, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you for that motion, Co-Chair. Again, colleagues, any discussion? Any objection? 2912 is adopted. I would guess Representative Kenny Geyer would like to take this to the House floor.
I'd love to do that.
Would anybody like to take it to full and to the Senate? I see. All right, you guys are going to have to do rock, paper, scissors to sort this out.
I'm out. Let them slug it out.
Why don't I do this one? You do the next one.
Okay. All right. Senator Monroe will take that to full and to the Senate floor. And I will go ahead and...
Actually, it was just the other way around.
It was the other way around.
I'm sorry. Well, whichever way.
Bill, I'll take this.
Okay. Got that?
I do.
All right. I'm going to close the public hearing and work session on 2912. I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2724. I'm going to invite those who have signed up to testify to come forward. That would be Ms. Kennedy, Ms. Fisher, and Representative Sanchez. Thank you so much for your patience with us today. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Ms. Deister, you want to warm this one up for us?
I'll do my darndest. House Bill 2724 creates a rent guarantee program in the Housing and Community Services Department. The program provides incentives and financial assistance to landlords that rent or lease to low-income households. Specifically, payments to landlords for unpaid rent, property damage, and eviction costs up to certain limits and under conditions specified by the bill. The -1 amendment basically cedes the rent guarantee program with $125,000 general fund, as well as funding for one program analyst position at 0.5 FTE at a cost of $98,247 per biennium.
Thank you, and welcome. Who would like to go first? Representative?
Thank you. For the record, Representative Tana Sanchez, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, thank you so much for this opportunity. I actually want to come and talk to you about House Bill 2724 as a service provider. I'm the Director of Family Services at the Native American Youth and Family Center, and we actually administer one of these programs, the training program for this. So it's actually, I listen to the description of the bill, and I don't think of it necessarily like that. I actually think of it more as the work that we do with clients and individuals who are actually using this this training and actually being able to have that rent guarantee on the other side. It has been an amazing opportunity. We've done this for many, many years. Multnomah County, of course, has held on to that ability and continued to fund this, and I think it's just such an amazing program because it offers the opportunity for people who may have never learned about how to rent a home. We started using it for foster kiddos as well. We do it for our high school students in our alternative high school. It is such a great opportunity because we know that not everybody grows up in a family who either consistently rents or who even consistently stays in the same home over a period of time. We know that we're dealing sometimes with populations and people who just don't have that consistent learning process. So many young people, you know, again, those foster kiddos, come out of a foster care trying to figure out, like, what do you mean? How do I do this? And it's just such a great opportunity for them. I actually took the class myself when I was learning to do the training, and it was just eye-opening because I grew up in a household, of course, that where, you know, the rent was paid or the mortgage was paid on a regular basis, but nobody talked about how it was done or what, you know, all the responsibilities that you had. This program actually gives people that education. It tells them about the responsibilities. It tells them about how to not count all your chickens before they're hatched, you know, and essentially what you do with a certain amount of money. It's I wish I could explain to you all the little details of the training process because it is so very, very important for people to understand, and they don't always get that growing up. I just think it's a wonderful opportunity to create really good renters, to create people who have a greater understanding of their responsibilities, not just as a renter, but as a part of society and how they can better their lives by doing that. And I just wanted to mention those pieces because, again, the bill doesn't really explain all the details of what it does for the different individuals that actually participate in the program. It really more, you know, talks about the landlord piece, which is great, but it really does have a great impact on the clients that we serve and the individuals that have gone through the program and have a better understanding for themselves about how they can be responsible renters.
Thank you very much. Ms. Kennedy.
Thank you, Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, again, Ryan Fisher, and I'm here on behalf of the...
I'm going to interrupt you, Mr. Fisher. Representative Sanchez? Should we pass this in the next few minutes? Would you like to take it to the House floor?
I would love to do that.
All right,
that.
Very good.
Very
I want to double check with you on that before I know that you have to run.
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting, Mr. Fisher.
No problem. Thank you. So I'm here today in support of this bill on behalf of the Community Action Partnership of Oregon as well as the Oregon Housing Authorities. I just want to give a little bit of background. So this bill creates a guarantee fund that can be connected to renter education programs. The renter education programs are already being done in many areas around the state because it is a very successful program, as you just heard. However, in the past, prior to 2013, in addition to somebody getting a certificate when they completed that class that said, hey, I spent 8 weeks going to a class to learn how to be a better renter and to be able to present that to a landlord, they also were able to say, and if I do damages up to a certain amount, you have this in addition to my deposit as a guarantee. In 2013, that portion that provided that guarantee was repurposed for a Housing Choice Landlord Guarantee Program fund. And we've heard from the providers throughout the state that that extra piece that this bill will create makes a big difference. And so we appreciate this opportunity to bring this bill forward.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Fisher, I know you didn't mean to do this, but your explanation seemed to give license to trashing the place because there's a fund behind me to make up for the fact that I had a Doberman living in the second bedroom. Do you want to correct that on the record?
Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, thank you very much for that question. It's the renter education piece that is critical to this. And what we find is that when somebody has a rental history that is not great, that they need to do things proactively to make sure that they have an opportunity to rent. Taking this class is an important part of that. For a landlord who is looking to take a risk, seeing that they have gone through and done that work is important. Having this little bit of insurance also can make the difference sometimes in the landlord saying, okay, I'm going to give you a shot. And what we've seen, as you'll hear in a moment, is that they don't bring in a Doberman, they don't do damages because they have taken that renter education program and they understand what their responsibilities are to be a renter.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And as an animal advocate, I just need to say Dobermans are fine, fine dogs. Very seldom cause problems for landlords.
Thank you, Chair.
But that be that as a name. Ms. Kennedy.
Yes. For the record, my name is Caitlin Kennedy. I am the Rentwell Program Administrator through Transition Projects. So thank you so much, Representative Gomberg and Senator Johnson and committee members. So I just wanted to talk. I oversee the Rentwell program, which is the tenant education piece, but in Multnomah County, I also oversee our Landlord Guarantee Fund, is what we call it. That fund was in place since 2013. However, that fund only has enough money in it for about the next 3 years or so, and then that will completely go away. In Multnomah County, this year we've had 650 graduates of the program, and only one claim has been used. It's actually less than 1% over the last 8 years of this program have actually utilized the claim rate. Clackamas County also has their own guarantee. It goes up to $1,000 beyond the security deposit, and that over the last 8 years, they've had two claims being used. So it actually is not used very often, and yet it does give the landlord that extra incentive and that extra support to rent to somebody who might have a blemished background.
Very good. Senator.
Your testimony suggests to me that this bill assumes a preferred provider of this training. And you said Multnomah County enough that for those of us that don't represent Multnomah County, you got our attention.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson. So within the Community Action Network, as well as the housing authorities, there are renter education programs throughout the state. We believe 30 out of 36 counties have access to one of these renter education programs. And so while in the metro area, they had resources to be able to replace this fund when it was taken away in 2013, it has not been available to those other areas around the state. And that's why they've asked to bring this bill forward.
So it's safe to assume that all community action organizations will get a shot at doing this.
Chair Gomber, Chair Johnson, yes, and that is how the program has operated in the past. They have to offer a renter education program that meets certain criteria in order to be able to have access to the funds, but yes, they would all have that.
And that's my trigger to say for the record, my husband is the chair of the board of the Northwest Oregon Community Action Team. I got one more if
please.
Nobody else has got one. What I'm trying to figure out is how does this bill harmonize with 2002 that we heard yesterday, so that if a landlord accepts the benefits of this bill, does that automatically trigger the 2002 requirements? Have we conflict checked these?
Chair Gomberg, Chair Johnson, I can't answer that directly. I did some work initially in some amendments to 2002, and we worked hard to make sure that sort of inadvertent payments, for instance, if you own a building and somebody with a housing choice voucher were to rent a unit, we made sure that then the owner of that building would not fall into the scope of House Bill 2002. So while this would not be considered rent, and so my assumption is that they would be clear, but I would be happy to.
Ms. Dyster, I'd like assurance on that. I don't want to inadvertently, for a well-meaning landlord that accepts the benefit under 2724, trigger the notice requirements and everything else in 2002. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure we've sorted the conflict.
All right. Well, thank you, India, very much. Any other questions for this panel? Is there anybody else that was here to testify on 2724? Representative.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, House District 46, and I just want to say that I think that what you might be talking about is the conflict with the voucher Section 8 program, which is actually not House Bill 2002, so I want to make sure on the record. The 2002 is the Preservation Fund. And so I don't think there'd be any conflict.
I knew what I was saying.
Oh, okay. So I don't think there would be any conflict. I'm looking at Director Salazar with that.
Well.
So
you maybe have someone that can speak to this.
Okay, because we did. We have talked a lot about the intersection between the Section 8 program and this particular program. And one of the reasons that we were able to take the staffing cost off of this is because we've passed that other program. It's the same kind of staffing that looks like it looks at whether they would dip into the Section 8 mitigation fund, which actually goes up to $5,000, or this particular fund, which goes up to $2,000. So that's where we've tried to look really carefully.
Mr. Chair, if we have someone with legal expertise, could we have that opinion?
Okay. Please.
And the one other thing I just wanted to say for the record is that originally the request was actually for the training programs in the different counties, and given the budget deficit, we really just paired it back to this one mitigation fund. But I want to make sure that you know that if there was ever funding from the state, this is the kind of thing that we feel like people who have a very hard time renting are kind of stuck if they've been incarcerated or they have FED evictions because they haven't paid. Part of it is almost case management to have people put their finances together. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have something like this, people don't have options if they can't rent and they end up on the streets. So very important program.
All right. We could excuse somebody so that another witness can come forward. And colleagues, if any of you have scheduled meetings at 2 o'clock, we just need to keep a quorum here. But I think if you need to go, please. I think we'll be all right. Welcome.
Hello, co-chairs. Thank you for inviting me up. I'm John DiLorenzo. I'm an attorney at Davis Wright Tremaine. And I'm also an apartment owner. And I'm here on my own behalf. I am concerned. First of all, I'd like to say I support the concept behind this program. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a wonderful way to assure landlords who are willing to take a risk on some tenants that they won't have as many risks as they otherwise would. I am concerned about the interplay between this program, other programs you may enact, and 2002, which you approved yesterday. And I'm going to remove my glasses because I have trouble seeing close. I pulled up the language from 2002. 2002 includes in its ambit, besides other things, a contract that is for any other type of government assistance or subsidy that includes an affordability restriction, and that is identified in rules adopted by the Housing and Community Services Department. Okay, I think this would be that type of a benefit, because I am sure there would be a restriction that goes along with this on the amount of rents that could be charged. So I believe it would trigger potentially the 2002 requirements, and I don't see it listed in the exemptions in 2002, which I think, as Ryan described, were, you know, having a Section 8 voucher, things like that. So my concern is accepting benefits. If I, as a landlord, accepted benefits under this program, am I now unwittingly making myself subject to the 2002 notice requirements that I may not want to do, and that might discourage me from participating in the program? I think if that's the case, it's easily fixable. All you'd have to do is just put a conflict amendment in this that shows it as a further exemption from 2002, and it'd be very easy to deal with.
All right. Thank you, Mr. DiLorenzo. Any questions?
I just saw a sea of shaking heads behind you. I would love to have this resolved. And if it is a simple resolution, this is a great bill, and we ought to get surety for everybody and move forward.
Well, Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, I will just say I do not believe that there is a rent restriction attached to this program. But if there mm-hmm. are others who want to speak to that, I'm happy to make way.
Welcome back, Director.
Thank you so much, co-chairs. For the record again, Margaret Salazar, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. You know, we had not considered this issue, this potential conflict before, had not heard this language described in this way, but our understanding is that if there are not affordability restrictions connected with the rent guarantee program per se. I think it would behoove us all to go back and take a look at this language to ensure that, but that the notice requirements in House Bill 2002 are related to the affordability restrictions connected with the apartment, not the rent charge in a market rate unit. So I think we need to perhaps look at that again rather than debating it in real time here, but happy to take a look at that.
Yes, and co-chairs John DiLorenzo again for the record. I appreciate that, and I think there are a number of ways to resolve it. If the record is going to reflect that the program will, it will include no affordability requirements, nor will the rules that implement it, then I think it's probably fine. But if there's a chance that the rules might include an affordability requirement, then I think it would be, just for safety's sake, worth your while to include a conflict amendment and just exempt it from 2002. That's just my gratuitous suggestion.
Senator,
but I like the program.
I'm just trying to sort out some of our options. We are not scheduled for any committee meetings next week.
At this time.
But that could change on a moment's notice. We could send the bill to Capital Construction. We can try and make some resolution here.
Can we do a conflict amendment in full if we send it out of here and it goes to full?
Co-chairs, I would need to. I would ask that you recess and let me find out, just to be safe.
Are you guys due on the floor?
No, we're
at 4 o'clock.
Some of us are doing caucus, but this takes priority.
Okay. I would suggest we recess and let Ms. Dicer
stand at ease.
Yeah, stand at ease and let Ms. Dicer go get instructions.
All right, I think we are back on the record, and having assessed the situation in a little more detail, Director, do you have something to share with us at this point?
Co-chairs, thank you so much. For the record, my name is Margaret Salazar, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services, and I'd like to state on the record that House Bill 2724 comes with no affordability restrictions, and our agency does not intend to establish any affordability restrictions in rule.
Thank you so much for putting that on the record. Is there anyone else here that wants to comment or sees a problem with where we are, or if we proceed at this point with that clarification? I don't see anyone else coming forward. Senator, do you have any concerns?
I do not. Thank you, Madam Director.
Thank you.
Is there a recommendation from the LFO at this point?
There is. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move the adoption of the Dash 1 Amendments into House Bill 2724.
Okay, quorum being present, I'll ask again. Colleagues, any discussion? Any objection? We'll adopt the Dash 1s.
Okay. LFO is recommending that House Bill 2724 be amended by the Dash 1 Amendment, as amended by the Dash 1 Amendment, be moved to the full Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the amended House Bill 2724 be moved to the full Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you so much, Senator. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative.
So I don't think I need to declare a conflict of interest because I think the class is sufficiently broad, and I don't want to put anybody else who might be in my same situation in a bad spot by not having them do that. But I own several rental units, and one of them I do have a Section 8 tenant, so it's possible that I could be in a position to take advantage of this fund. So just as a courtesy and in the interest of transparency, I'll just declare that to the committee.
Thank you, Representative. Anything else? Yes, Senator.
Ditto.
Okay. All right. We're properly balanced in potential conflicts. Is there further conversation here? If not, is there objection to the, moving this amended motion forward to the full committee with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, motion carries. I think that Representative Sanchez is going to take this to the House floor, and Senator Monroe is going to take it to full and to the Senate floor.
Thank you.
And with that, I will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2724. Senator Johnson, we have no meetings scheduled for this committee in the foreseeable future, and that's potentially open to change on an hour's notice. But that being said,
good.
What a pleasure it's been to work with you.
I'm glad we had tuna and cheese day yesterday. Thank you all for your service. I think we've done good work together, and it's been an honor to serve with everybody.
Thank you so much, everyone. And with that, we are adjourned. So they won't put the